Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to Spanish Aquí Presents. It's the whole of Spanish Aquí Presents here. The whole of it is like here to say the whole of it.
I'm sorry, I heard whole.
I heard hueco. Where?
As opposed to
the half of it. ¿Qué estás metiendo? ¿Qué?
I'm listening.
Welcome. Mira, hey. Welcome. The whole of SAP is here to say hi. Hello.
Hello.
The whole of
everybody.
What's up, guys?
Oh man, we out here.
What's up? I mean, there's a lot going on in the world right now, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. By the way, did you guys hear about this thing that might be happening in 10 years because of the moon?
What?
Yeah. Oh, my God. The moon just makes changes.
Right.
Werewolves?
Werewolves. Werewolves are going to be a thing now. In the moon's orbit in 10 years' time, it's going to... like
wobble.
Shift a little bit. It's like it's gonna stutter a little bit, mm-hmm. and that's gonna affect a lot of the sea, obviously,
gonna
cause a lot of floods, a lot of tsunamis.
I think I heard something about that. Happening slowly, like to a lesser degree.
It's happening slowly, but in 10 years' time, it will be a problem.
You guys, the world is so bad.
Well,
yeah,
I guess,
and the moon too.
So it's been the moon. It hasn't been climate change. It's been the moon all along.
I mean, I'm sure climate change has something to do with it.
I'm sure some people be like, see?
It's not real.
Oh, no.
Climate change deniers. I'm like, it's the moon. Look. It's Mercury in retrograde.
Okay.
I told you.
Carlitos.
Wait,
just
retrograde?
Retrograde.
I call it Mercury in reggaeton.
Oh my god.
Carlitos, just tell everybody that you're a flat earther already. Just tell them.
Oh my god.
Wow. I'm a dome earther. I'm a dome earther.
Yes, okay.
What is that?
It's like a curved in the top but flat in the bottom.
Don't joke like that, Carlos. People are gonna think you're serious.
No, people will come after me. I'm joking. The world. Hey, we are didn't the billionaires go up in space? Could they confirm if it's a...
Where are they? Like, I don't get it. I'm like, what? Like, what are you going to do there? Like, what are you going to do there? Please tell me what Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are going to do cuando
están ahí. Jeff Bezos.
What's his name? I mean, Did I say it wrong?
Nothing more.
I love that you said it that way.
Look, we give shit to rappers for flexing on Instagram. And yes. That's essentially what they did. All of them were like, okay, here we go.
Instead of wearing a watch and chains, it's like, bro, come check out my fucking rocket. I'm going to space next week. And like, what?
You know how rappers have that stack of cash in their ear and they're like, hello, hello? That's literally what they did. But
to me, it just feels like the ultimate. You know what? This is like toxic straight guy energy
because
it is such a little, like it's such a dick flex. Because even the ship that they flew out on is literally shaped like a dick.
Yeah.
It is phallic, incredibly phallic. It's like, okay, babe, I know you're compensating. It's like someone with a muscle car and you know.
Honey, we know. You have a little pene. Tiene un chiquitico. Mira, it's okay. I'm not throwing shade at little penises.
But they don't think it's okay.
But they don't think it's okay. And that's the problem. That's on them. They need to learn the motion for their oceans. Speaking of ocean.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. The moon.
Right?
Okay.
You see, uh-huh. I brought that back without even trying.
Pretty flower.
Uh-huh.
Mira.
A ver.
You guys, I have a pica for us today.
Okay.
Been wanting to do
peek
this.
On it.
I've been wanting to do this for a couple recordings, but I wanted to make sure that we were all here.
Mm-hmm.
So as many of you know, Cuba is a hot mess right now. We are recording this. I'm just going to say the date. It is July 29th when we are recording this episode, just because stuff changes within the hour and sometimes stuff changes within the day and the weeks and whatever. So, we have Tuku Anitas on the podcast, and I thought it would be important to like at least just like speak on it And, you know,
also give it some information, too, because a lot of people don't even know what's going on in Cuba right now.
Yeah. Tony, do you want to give a little, or do you want, I'm like, I can, too. I don't. It's up to you.
I mean, there's sort of like historic, unprecedented protests going on the island. People aren't
in favor. I mean, against what specifically? This is the first time people are protesting
freedom. Well, they did have a protest, I believe, in 1994 as well. That was another time that it happened, but it immediately got shut down because I will say, I think social media, as much as we hate it, social media is what is helping amplify all the situations all over the world, you know, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Colombia, Puerto Rico. Like, we've seen it. Like, we talked about Puerto Rico when stuff was going down. Like, we've talked about other places, but, you know, definitely So 1994.
It was a lot easier to control it back then. The people in power for it to control in 94, but this time around, it was a little different.
And so people are protesting. They're yelling, Patria y Vida. Patria y Vida. And
right, which is a direct response to, let's say, the communist islands. What was the slogan? It was patriotism or death.
Yeah.
Right? Patria o muerte. So this is exactly the opposite. It's become a humanitarian crisis, right? Yeah. People, food, medicine, people are dying and they're not getting the healthcare that they need.
There's a pandemic and
correct.
There's no vaccines, even though they keep saying that Russia gave them vaccines. Who knows how they're even like taking accountability for it, because it doesn't make any sense. And so we pretty much shed light on kind of what is happening at the moment here, 2021 in Cuba. Tony and I went to the protest, the first one that they had here on July 12th in LA. Mm-hmm. The first protest in Cuba was in July 11th, the day before. I'm not going to get so much into like, you know, specifics and facts, because I think that's a thing that a lot of people can also, you know, do their own research as well, because it would take up the whole entire podcast to really talk about it. But I will say it's very telling to me as a Cuban, a woman from Miami, was not born there, has been to Cuba before. And, you know, seeing how everybody has really come together, the Cubans at least, to like speak up and talk about this and like unite. Because, again, sure, there's not that many, you know, Cubans all over, but it's interesting to see us all like get together and fucking talk about this and like see how we can help each other out and support each other and amplify and whatnot. So, I'm like, there's a lot of things that we've been posting. Tony, how have you been feeling like the past couple weeks?
It's kind of emotional. It's really sad, and but it's also inspiring in a way. For my part, real quick, I'll say that my father left the island in 1962 on the Pedro Pan program, which flew children who didn't have families to land in the States, and his family stayed behind. My grandparents, my uncle and aunts, they never left the island. But I did get to see them as children when I would visit. So I had some relationship with them, but they've all passed away since then. So I don't have any remaining relatives on the island now. My Cuban relatives are now in Florida. On the one hand, it's sort of like this like human empathy thing. Like people are dying. People need food. And we've heard for years about, of course, this communist regime, whether it's from our families at Raiza or just, you know, from what we know.
Yeah.
Like, I know cousins of my father's that were, like, they fought for Batista, and then they were, like, imprisoned. Cousins that were in jail that survived firing squads. These kinds of horrible, horrible things that I don't think we hear about too much, because these are stories that are sort of, like, leaked through family and relatives and first-person accounts, because they have such a control over the media. And the government has such a control over the guns, which is also the scary thing. I was in Florida a week and a half ago talking to my father, and I asked him what he thought about this. And he said I'm just putting this, this is his perspective. He feels like it's not going to end well, because the government's going to do what they've always done. And we've started hearing reports now of people being on the island, being taken in the middle of the night, which is stuff that the government has always done to squash dissent. And it's scary, and it's almost, we want to be able to help, but it's sort of like, what can you do? The embargo does not limit humanitarian aid. You know, people have been, but the island will blame the embargo.
Because,
regardless. That's the other thing too, you know, from someone who isn't Cuban, the perspective is so sort of mutated because a lot of people who are getting this information, it thinks the embargo is to blame. Do you know what I mean?
Well, they just repurpose the original thing that started it to fit a narrative and nobody's actually listening to the thing, which I think is what always happens.
Yeah. And it's not quite right because it's not, it's about the people, you know what I mean? And it's, there's a huge disconnect. I mean, you know, what's so weird is that the Black Lives Matter movement released a statement and it was so incredibly tone deaf that I was just like truly in shock.
I appreciate you as our Afro-Latino on the podcast saying that because like reading that shit, like that shit broke me. I was like, damn, like that sucks. And I feel like I can't even say something. But like, I can call it out. You know what I mean? Like, it's, it just sucks to be like, fuck, I did so much. And it's not like I scratch your back, you scratch mine. But just to be like, I feel like I'm always posting about everything.
Yeah.
Fucking like the Middle East, the fucking, all the Latino, like the Latin American countries, like everything for Black Lives Matter. Like all my Asian friends, like when all the hate, like, I'm not saying that like you have to do it. I understand that the biggest thing for me is like, I understand so many people come to me or like they don't know how to like ask, like they're all like, and I get it, like I'm really like scary sometimes on like my responses, but it's just like it comes with like mad heat and passion for my like my opinions and what I believe in. And I think that it sucks when people just won't read a couple things, read some articles, like do your research. Before I posted anything about the Middle East, I fucking did my research just because, you know, I don't know, somebody I follow that I know is super cool and like famous posts about it. No, like I'm going to make sure that I do my research. And I think it's been a little disheartening to see that, like I've had like, you know, Mexican friends, all different types of people like into my DM and like immediately coming at me saying it's because of, it's blaming the conservative Cubans or the Cubans. Oh, that's your people from Miami or like all these things. And it's like, I think people need to like go a little bit, like stop thinking about politics when it comes to this shit. Like we're just talking about fucking human lives. Like, how would you like it if your fucking 13-year-old little brother was pulled out by the fucking U.S. Army in the middle of the night, dragged by his fucking feet as his nails try to fucking hold on to whatever the hell he can. And they throw him into jail if he says he doesn't want to fight against his people on the street that are protesting for liberty, which that child also wants. And they're literally cutting off limbs of these boys. Oh, you don't want to do it? Okay, fine. Dale, Juanito, ven pa acá. Cut him. And they're just doing that. They're like, and it's like people think like, oh, well, fuck them. They didn't want to help the Mexicans with the border, or these Republican and they didn't want to help the Black. And it's not like, I understand that. I'm not saying that that's okay. But I'm also saying like, just because some people suck, like.
Well, it's a bit dismissive, isn't it? It's like we acknowledge, but we're not willing to do the work to try to heal the problem. And that's, to me, the embarrassing thing about being caught in the middle of all that. It's like this weird thing of like, okay, so are we so segregated as groups that we won't even look at the bigger picture here? Like, this is a human rights affair, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll also say this, like, the Cuba thing is like, it's so triggering because literally weeks before the Cuba thing happened, there was a massive political upheaval in Colombia that nobody talked about.
I remember posting about it, but nobody talked about it.
Well, it's interesting. Well, because first of all, if you want to know the Colombia thing, go listen.
Yeah.
I'm a guest in a podcast called Lost in America. I give a full hour dissertation on what is going on with the Colombian crisis at the moment. But what's funny is that any information that I had that I shared to the people on Instagram was immediately taken down.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, it was like somebody was meddling with censoring what's going on in Colombia. So the reason why people don't talk about it, don't have that information, is because the information is being taken away, which is what happened with every sort of human rights.
Yeah.
Especially international human rights affair, that's what happened. This highly censored stuff in the U.S. No one talks about that some of their posts are going through, but not all of their posts, you know?
Yeah.
And the reason why is that there's, we think hashtags are a great and powerful thing. We've learned the power in the hashtags. Mm-hmm. And yet sometimes hashtags is a way to filter out information. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. SOS Cuba is a huge hashtag. That's how I'm getting personally all of my information. But what if people were going through and deleting any post, any information that anyone had with the SOS Cuba hashtag in it?
Yeah, big people have been like, so there's a lot of activists that I've started following that, again, I didn't even know existed because nobody was talking about it. And it's so wild because I remember in an earlier podcast, me bringing it up. I feel like I haven't heard about Cuba in COVID. Like, what's going on? I messaged my friend. I could never hear back from him that lives in Cuba. I had WhatsApp and didn't hear back then. I literally just recently talked to him and he was just like, yeah, we don't have there's no internet. There's no nobody won. It's the people that are getting internet. It's super they're just, mira, los cubanos los resuelven. So they're, I don't know even how it's happening. Mm-hmm.
And or how they get these devices, because you also need the device.
It's all, it's literally it's wild because I think of Orange is the New Black, when they would hide the phones and the fucking cement and shit like that and whatever. That's how I feel when I see some of these videos too and stuff. And, you know, there is a lot of politics to this. Sure. Cuba mm-hmm. being free is a whole other hot mess of figuring out what that is. I don't know what that answer is. I look to my public officials and the people above to
that's a big ass question, isn't it? And once we start dismantling individually, that's overwhelming.
So mm-hmm. overwhelming. And you know, it's there's so much work. I mean, there's so much work. These people have been brainwashed. They have been brainwashed that the US doesn't want to help. And it's like, no, the US has actually been giving the stuff, right? But they don't get it. The government keeps it. Yeah. And I know people that have said, oh, my prima lives, my prima, her husband works in the military. They have a fucking badass fucking house. They live well.
Military and tourism.
Uh-huh. And then her, la hermana de ella, lives in, Regla, which is in Cuba. It's considered a pretty quote unquote ghetto neighborhood is literally what they told me when I was there. And I had no idea, but it was just one of those things that it's to hear those things and it's oh, of course the military lives good. So okay, we open it up and then what happens? And then you have all these other people talking about Cuba that you don't have family there. You've never talked about Cuba and you're number one, I don't even know, you're not speaking from a place of being there, which I think is the biggest thing that I've also been trying to help is amplifying the voices of the people in Cuba, which is why we did a fundraiser last week. Carlitos went to it. And Alex Fumero, Chris Garcia, Jenny Lorenzo, and a bunch of other Cuban artists, Kat Dahlia also performed. And it was emotional. We showed videos of the people, they played voicemails of people in prison. Again, I don't know how they're doing this, but they're getting literal fucking recordings of the imprisoned artists, because a lot of the people don't know this, but artists, the Afro Latino Cuban artists in Cuba, they're the ones that started this shit. Not the fucking white passing motherfucking Cubans, not the Cubans that just have whatever job. No, the artists, because they're artistic stuff was being censored, and they were protesting. And there's been so many people that have been protesting for such a long time, but because they are artists, it's nobody cares about them, right? We'll just throw them in prison. And there's people missing, YouTubers are missing. They have YouTubers from Cuba that have been talking about this and they're just gone. Nobody knows where they are. Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand when people come into my DM or anybody of my other Cuban friends, because we've been sharing screenshots of shit that people have been saying to us. And it's like, bro, okay, fine. Whatever. Don't care what I say. I'm a Cubanita that's fucking out here in LA, fucking, living a very fucking good life in comparison to these people in Cuba. But at least go to the polls and listen to the videos of these people. That's mm-hmm. all I'm asking.
Well, I think also that the other thing too is, the Cuba that is presented on media and that touristy Cuba that a lot of Americans know about mm-hmm. versus actual real Cubans.
Yeah.
you know, and how there is a giant disconnect, you know. That Cuba that you see, the beautiful beaches and the nice buildings or whatever, that's like the Cubans for tourists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say that also speaking as a Colombian.
No, it's true.
You know, people are talking about Cartagena. It's like, I've never fucking been to Cartagena. Yeah. I don't know those places, right? Mm-hmm. Those places are super whitewashed and they're not for us. They're not for the people that live there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Neither
the people that live there know the country in a completely different light.
Yeah.
So to me, like a thing that sort of irks me, and I don't know if it's Carlos, Raisa, and Tony, if you also agree with this, but like, well, people will say like, oh my gosh, like Colombia is not like you say it is. Like, because I'm from Palmira, that where I grew up, it was like there was no paved roads. Like my house faced a landfill. Like it was like, I knew poverty growing up. Mm. So like, it's like, oh, wait, but like I've been to Colombia and it's not that. It's like, no fucking shit. Like you're a
it's
tourist
like going to
with lots
Acapulco
of money.
And be like, well, this is exactly what I thought Mexico is.
I've never traveled anywhere in the world and gone to one city and gone and thought, I know the country. I know it all.
Yeah, they're
I've
good.
Not once.
Yeah, yeah.
I know this block that I saw in this city.
And also, like, again, like, because it is a communist country, these people cannot, they can't talk. They can't talk about it. When I was there, I would like, and the thing is, like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like, trying to like not do bits, but like, you know, like we would become friends with the people that, you know, we were with, like we would bring them with us. They'd come and eat like whatever. Like, and it was one of these things that were like, I would try to like, even in the car, me like with one, like one of the guys, I mean, I drove a car when I was in Cuba from like Havana to Viñales for like an hour. I drove one of the fucking cars. The guy let me drive it. And he was, and it was like, I was, cause I kept bothering him, like asking him questions and stuff like about, cause I'm there. I'm like, this is like, I want to know like what the fuck is really going on, bro. And they were so nervous. Es que no querían. And cannot. So like the guía, literally like my guy, like he was just like, he like had to like, kind of like, he's like, I know, like you're really curious. Like I get it. And like, he's a journalist. He's like, but you have to understand, like,
right,
these people are terrified because there's also snitches.
Well, they could be traps.
There's snitches in every neighborhood. There's fucking snitches. And if they find out that you have one more bag of rice, que fulana de tal in the building, you know, next door, bro, they'll come and they'll fucking take your rice and they'll fucking take your beans and they'll take your other shit and be like, mira, you got a little bit of extra. Now we're going to take the rest of it. Fuck you, palapinga. Yeah. Like, I've seen videos where it's like people haven't had water for 11 days. I want to know what fucking American in the U.S., what they would do right now if our government did not provide water for 5 days and it was not like a hurricane or like a fucking natural disaster that was the reason. People would be
while
revolting.
The military has it. While like,
exactly. Yeah. While the others have it.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, people are not really putting yourself in their shoes. And I think like that's a big, big thing that I try every time. And I've said this to you guys all the time, like when I've had men make, you know, comments to me, whether they're a Trumpy or this, whatever. And I'm like, okay, like, well, you have a daughter. Yeah, I voted for Trump. Okay, cool. Like, what about your daughter? No, whatever. Fuck it. She'll vote for Trump too. I'm like, cool. So like, you know, like if Trump said, you know, he wanted to grab her pussy or he could grab her pussy. That's okay. Right. Cause you voted for Trump. So you're okay with Trump grabbing your daughter's pussy as long as she's like of age. Right. Like, that's cool. 18, bro. And their fucking faces se ponen que se mueran. And I'm like, again, put yourself in the shoes of a woman.
That's cognitive dissonance. And that's the problem with, you know, that's the main problem with most problems, I think, right now in the current modern world start with cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, like
believing shit that's against the what is it? To vote or to make decisions that go against you as a person or, you know, or as you as a human. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know I've talked a lot, obviously, but I also think like it's even extra emotional for me because I do have a lot of history with my family in Cuba. We don't have family there because of the history. You know, my tío Nino, he fought against Batista. He was one of the 12 comandantes that was fighting under Raúl Castro and helped make Fidel Castro like become in power, right? Because again, we all thought that they thought he was better, gonna be better than Batista. And it sucks because it was like it literally just became just as evil and actually worse, like whatever, different times, sure. Can't compare. But I've been listening to this shit my whole life. Like since I was in my mom's belly, I've been listening to these stories. And like my tío Nino fucking, when he left, when they had to escape, like my dad had to leave Cuba because they were going to kill him and the rest of the family. And he was a little fucking kid. Like he had to leave. They had to go to New York, start again. They, you know, like this immigrant life that we all know, like you don't speak English in Cuba. You go to another country and like, they're treating you like, you know, you're a fucking cucaracha. And like, like just like all the hard work that they did. And even like my tío Nino like has a book and everything because he wrote about like how he literally tried he joined the rebels to try to take down the Castros and everything. And like Fidel, long story short, like this guy like once like hit him up and like my tío Nino was like, oh, like when he was already living in Miami in Key Biscayne, he was like, oh, I want to talk to you. I want to help you take him down. Cause like legit, like my tío Nino had, like he was planning shit to like, they can, you know, there was Cubans that they were trying to like go and like free Cuba themselves. And so the guy came and straight up fucking shot him in his door. Cause he was someone that was sent by Fidel's people to be like, oh, we know that you're fucking leading this shit. We're going to get you first. And then my tío Nino's son, Kikito, had to go get a fucking, he had a fucking machine gun or something else. He grabbed the gun and gave it to him to like, it was like, what the fuck? This is happening in Key Biscayne. Like, that's like a bougie area. Like, every time I would go there for Christmas Eve, for Noche Buena, I will never forget, my brother Rafi would lift up the mat and show me the blood stains because the blood stain, it stained on like the like stone, like of the walkway or whatever, because it was all white. So yeah. So just to give you like, just like a really quick tidbit of the shit that like, I've been hearing my whole life. Cut to now, my tío Nino, you know, he's fucking in his what, like late 80s. And like, I wonder how he feels. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, how does it feel to see like these people like fighting for what you were fucking trying to fight for 62 years ago?
Still, yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Conversely, when I was in Miami, I don't know if this is a little snapshot of what was going on there. It felt like another world completely.
Yeah.
There's like the younger generation that has been hearing these stories. I'm going to say people in their 20s.
Yeah.
Let's say who are conservative leaning Cuban. Like a few weeks ago, protesting and supporting Ron DeSantis, the governor, for like sort of like criminalizing protests.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In response to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And then this was happening and in full force. This is on the local news. I did not go there in person. But like young people calling for like military action. Biden, you know, needs to go in there. And it was jarring just like from week the previous week. Someone was saying these same people were against Black Lives Matter protests. And now this is happening. And it's I guess it's back to what Oscar was saying earlier about, I think you were saying about politicization of like these human rights issues, which everything in America is filtered down through these. Like, I feel like sadly, even COVID, we've seen it with the pandemic. Literally every single thing has been partisanized. I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah.
I don't. So then these real problems with hard, but there's no easy solutions to any of these things. How do you even approach solving them?
And also, like, what is the solution? You know, like, I think in terms of, like, generationally, in our genes and our spirits, you know, as Latina, like, our souls are tired, dude. Like, we're...
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? We grew up with all of this pain, you know? Like, we all come from different countries. But what connects us as Latina is like the beauty of where we come from. Mm-hmm. Where we come from is Cuba is fucking beautiful. There's so much orgullo from that place. Mm. Puerto Rico, same. Mm-hmm. Colombia. There's so much to be proudful of. But then you marry that with like the political unrest for all of these countries involved. The history covered in blood. We have them emblazoned on our flags. The bloodshed lost for our independence. That doesn't end. We're still fighting. And that's tiring.
Yeah.
That's, politically speaking, I'm fucking exhausted. You know what I mean? Fighting my own fights, fighting other people's fights, like grieving, collectively sharing our traumas together. That is healing in a way, but that's exhausting work.
Yeah. What would be the best case scenario? Would you like,
well, that's, what that's I'm saying is that, part. Like, well, I mean, not to sound all doom and gloomy, but like, is there a solution? Is there a solution? Will there be a Band-Aid put on this problem? And then 10 years later, we're back at square one again, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I heard in a panel where someone made a comment. I was like, yeah, like, I get that. And like, they were talking about it was all Cubans. And there was one Afro-Latino Cubano that was there. And he was like, you know, one of the biggest things that worries me is of Cuba being free, you know, given that libertad, okay, take down, you know, the communist regime, whatever. He's like that there were, that he has, you know, spoken with other friends where it's like, yeah, like we worry like about like, is this going to become like what happened in Mexico where like, you know, it just become came, it started becoming run by like the cartel, that kind of, you know, like, because again, like the people that are going to have the money to run for anything are again going to be the people that still are fucking shit up. So like there's gotta be, I don't ever want to speak like I know any of the facts of these things. I don't know, like there should be some fucking like UN peace treaty ass motherfucker ambassadors like to like help like be like, this is what humans need to like, again, I might be wrong. I have no idea, but like, I think that's like an ideal idea.
But Risa, I think that's, to tie it right back to the Cuban situation. And I think this is like the biggest issue of like this sort of like internet activism that's happening, which is very welcome.
Yeah.
And it's how big movements start. But there is the double-edged sword of this, of the misinformation that is being spread.
Mm-hmm.
The political versus the human rights aspect of this fight.
Yeah. Mm.
The Cuban crisis is a human rights violation.
Yes.
The people are struggling. And I think a lot of people are ignoring the human rights aspect of it and looking at it politically, the embargo aspect of it, right? Like, let us not forget that every political act is a human rights act underneath it all. It's good to look deeper than what you think it is, right? Sometimes the work is like, okay, I can blame it because let's be real. That's what's happening. Let me blame it on some political aspect of this government when in fact they're not willing to do the work of like actually looking at a Cuban face to face and seeing the pain of their day to day.
That's it.
That's too much for them.
Yeah.
The problem is like it's easier to dehumanize a cause or a situation. And you've seen it time and time again. But it's also not a coincidence because that's what people like the people in power. That's like one of their main weapons that they have. If you dehumanize 100%. your opponent, so unquote unquote, then it's easier to kill them, get rid of them. Whatever you could, whatever negative thing. And people be like, yeah, okay, it's the cause as opposed to, no, these are people.
Yeah.
And to me, I don't know about y'all, but for me, one of the biggest causes of action for me to get politically motivated is to hear those stories.
Yeah.
That's why the Black Lives Matter movement worked.
Yeah.
Because people were able to share their pain. We saw names associated to the crimes being committed.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we get action. That's how we activate, because we are human beings. It is encoded in our DNA to be empathetic for each other. Let's not forget that when we become politically active, right? It's not just about the act. It's about the people involved, you know?
Yeah. And to bring it back to what Rai said with the fundraiser, which is what the main purpose of the best way to handle this or to how people can help is to help amplify these voices, which is what I think it's a practical sense of, like, you always ask for, well, what is this money going to do, or what is this fundraising, or what? It really, when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, is essentially amplify the right people to talk about the right stuff. Exactly. And hopefully that sets the domino effect as to what Oscar just literally talked about.
And let's get the right people in these spaces. Let's have the right people talk about these issues.
So I was going to say, I have a couple Instagram accounts for people to follow. And I mean, I know there's so many more, but I want to like give a shout out to these people because they have been some of the ones that I have been really, really happy to like read their things, I guess, because I'm like, okay, cool, great. This is exactly what I want to say, but I don't know how to say this. Like, you know, like, because I do get very, I get really emotional and really passionate about something sometimes, and it's fucking hard to like not want to yell and cry and like get into it personally.
But it's always good to like throw some resources.
Yes, exactly. Like, so yeah, America Valdez is someone that has been shedding a lot of light. Also Jason Canela from LA, he's an actor here. He him and his brother Giancarlos in Miami, they have really been like leaders of the movement out in Miami and in LA, and like, you know, really networking. I mean, I don't know how many threads I'm on right now at this point with Cubans all over LA, which is wild. I know there were so many of us here. Shout out to every single one on those threads.
I mean, and also like politically active Cubans, like it's really good to see like the people that we know, people who've been featured on this podcast, be so politically motivated. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Also, Cuba AMP is the organization that we did the fundraiser for. Alex Fumero is the one that kind of like put it all together. So shout out to him. He's been really good. That organization, what they're doing, they are getting people to they're grabbing the video footage from people in Cuba that is real, and they're adding subtitles and context for people to watch it. Because another big thing is what you guys said earlier. Like, yeah, like you can show a video on CNN or Fox News or fucking KTLA, lo que sea, right? Pero si tú no entiendes lo que te están diciendo, what do you care? You just see a bunch of people.
Or it could be interpreted differently.
Yeah, they can say whatever they want. And it's like, let's make sure that we're grabbing, again, the real messages. Because there's a lot of not real messages that are being said out there. And then there's another one called, her name is Marisa Daniela. And it's Mi Ma in Cuba is her IG. She also puts a lot of stuff. She's always been connecting Cuba to America and stuff like that. So I've been following her for a while. And there's so many more other people. I just think, you know, whatever you do, if you're listening to this and one, you have no idea what is going on. There's so many articles right now, just like read about them. And like, but like, let's like make sure that like you're reading them from like, or like Latino journalist or like someone that, you know, like don't pull up an article that doesn't sound like someone from Cuba or like something like that, or like that knows about it is really writing it. Unfortunately, those are the ones that usually get it wrong. At like, no shade, but it's real. We've just been seeing it a lot. And I mean, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know what else to say, I guess.
I have one more. I might just add it when we... I'll write it when we post this, because it's Sally de Amarillo. She's an entrepreneur in Cuba, but it's her handle is not the easiest to.
We can tag
them. Write it.
We'll tag them. Yeah, exactly. We'll tag all of them, and you know.
Pero mira, la marcha continúa. We just have to keep, you know, steady,
and eyes on the prize, and also. Cafecito.
Que viva Cuba Libre.
Si viva Cuba Libre. You know what? Instead of cafecito, let's have Cuba Libre.
Cuba Libre. Ahí está. Yo tengo aquí el Bacardi.
Okay. Bacardi. Tengo la Coca-Cola.
Dale.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone. Solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. You probably know me from TV, or maybe you read my best-selling book and tried one of my amazing cocktails, or maybe you saw me on Broadway. What I can say is following dreams is kind of my thing. But of all the things I'm lucky enough to get to do, the thing that I get asked about the most are my shoes. What's my secret? DSW. DSW is the best place to get all the shoes you need from brands you love. Trust me, I'm obsessed. In fact, I love DSW so much, I've teamed up with them to create a collection of shoes from must-have sandals to super cool sneakers that are guaranteed to get compliments. Because if I've learned anything, it's that if you've got big dreams to follow, you're gonna need some really great shoes. Find the shoes of your dreams when you shop my new collection now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
And slurp, slurp, slurp. Mi gente, we are back with our guest today, a superstar, a fellow cubanita from Miami.
Anda.
She's the creator and showrunner of Diary of a Future President, second season of which is about to premiere this week on Disney Plus.
Within 24 hours.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
Please welcome Ilana Peña. How are you?
Yay! I'm so honored. I love you guys so much.
Oh my God. Thank you for taking from your very busy schedule. I know you must be going through it.
Just like sort of right now. We finished Diary in March, and so it's been a long wait up until being really busy like this week.
That's a pretty good turnaround.
Yeah.
That was quick. Oh my gosh.
No, it was literally cameras stopped rolling in January. We stopped post in March, and we're airing tomorrow.
Disney don't play.
The hustle is real. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Ilana. Oh my gosh. So you have the second season in the can. How are you feeling right now? I mean, you must be so proud, so happy, so relieved to do all that. And now it's airing tomorrow. What's going through your mind right now?
I love saying tomorrow.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I dreamed it. I honestly feel like I dreamed it because we were one of the first shows back in COVID. And it was like, it was scary. It was another world. It was like, we didn't have any like kind of other thing to look to. My manager set me up with a Zoom with the Lord of the Rings showrunners who were shooting in COVID in New Zealand. And he was like, they'll be able to tell you. And
like a support group?
I get on a Zoom with them and they're like, yeah, you know, it got a little bad yesterday. We had two cases in all of New Zealand. And I was like,
oh, this is not the right. We're not, I cannot relate.
Or like it was going on. Or something. But it was something so insane where I was like, okay, so we're in a different world.
We can't relate. We can't relate.
But like, good for you. But yeah, it was scary. And I'm really proud of, you know, you're always like, you feel like you go to war when you're shooting a show. Mm-hmm. You're like, let's get on our gear and like go fight. But in this, like, we genuinely were trying to keep each other alive. Mm-hmm. So it was an extra, a little bit extra. But we did it.
How did you handle the COVID team?
I love the, oh my God. My friend makes fun of me because
your mileage may vary. It's a very, and I'm only saying this because this is your second season. And in your first season, you get used to certain, you know, you appreciate it differently for a lot of people, a lot of things that you can do. Suddenly it's taken away from you and you're corralled and you don't, you know, maybe I'm just talking. Maybe I'm still.
Maybe okay, Carlos is a little triggered right now.
You're projecting a little bit.
Yeah, like this is more about you, Carlitos. We could talk later offline if you want.
Okay, sorry.
No.
How was your experience?
I'm like obsessed with our COVID team. They're in the show. They're background extras in the finale.
Oh, wow.
Because we wanted to thank them. Dr. Pham, our show doctor, shout out to Dr. Pham. He still is like my main dude. Like he's so there for me.
I'll text
him and I'll be like I went to Europe with my roommate in June. And I was like, Dr. Pham, do you think I go to Europe? Do you think it's safe? Doctor, like, what do I do? And he blessed the trip. And I'm telling you, he said, I think Delta's going to get bad and this is your window, so go.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Giving Fauci a run for his money.
I mean,
so, it's almost as if we should be listening to our doctors in a way.
Dr. Pham needs to start a
it's a crazy how science makes sense, right?
He was correct. Yeah. But yeah, no, I loved our COVID team. And if you look in the finale, there's a restaurant scene and a few of them are in the background, like sipping fake wine. And
dope.
I'm for sure going to like.
That's a nice little Easter egg. And you heard it here. Maybe not but definitely heard it here.
Fun.
First?
Yeah. First? Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, is that an exclusive?
Look at us. We got
hell yeah.
Now your job is to get to the end of the episode and let us know which of those extras you think a part of the COVID team. That's the challenge.
Yeah. And who's coming back for season 3?
Right. But not made the cut.
But not as COVID officers, because please be gone COVID by season 3.
I know.
Ay. Wow.
My gosh. Well, okay. So Ilana, you're from Miami. And there is a fun little thing that Spanish Techie Presents asks every single
Tony.
Guest.
Tony.
Tony.
I already know the answer.
Tony.
I do too.
Oh, Tony.
But the
yes, I already know
already.
Yes. All of us Miami Cubans in LA, we compare where we went to high school.
Yeah.
Right? You know the answer. And it's not gonna make anyone happy.
Hey, I feel out of FOMO because I don't know.
I desperately wanna know.
Okay. It was in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh my God, no.
She's like, oh my God, you're bad.
Oh.
Oh my God, it was 954.
It was 954. When my mom got remarried, my family moved from North Miami to Weston and I went to Pink Crest.
That's a nice school.
So it was in Fort Lauderdale, which is a swear word to Miamians.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a Pinecrest in Miami.
There is.
So, and that's the one word Pinecrest, and the two word Pinecrest is the swear word.
There's a two word Pinecrest and a one word
Pinecrest. Exactly.
Yeah. There's Pinecrest and then there's deep. Pinecrest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. It makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the confusion.
Feels very dramatic with novela vibes.
Right.
Remember when I told you I was from Pinecrest, single word? I lied.
Well, speaking of novela vibes, huh?
I was just finishing the joke. Keep going.
All right. I was going to say, when I first met you, Ilana, you were the writer's assistant at Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And you were about to become a staff writer there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say I'm so proud of you. Aww. And in awe, because like to make the leap from being in the same series, writer's assistant to staff writer, to then creating and show running, and now you're directing on your own show, right?
Yeah. That,
I need to know how did you make this happen? How did you make that leap?
I still think it's that huge. They're going to be like, we made a huge mistake.
No. it's tremendously successful.
Why do we all think that every time?
It's imposter syndrome. Yeah. Here we go.
No, I mean, here's the thing. Tony knows Rachel Bloom. Tony knows Aline Brosh McKenna. My boss is a Crazy Ex. They walked the walk, you know, like when I came on as their assistant and then they saw me as a writer. They saw me as a person. They saw me as somebody with something to say and they gave me things to say. And then they promoted me to writer's assistant. I wrote an episode with them. It was like, you know, it was a show that was very in my voice. I was very myself in that room. Mm. And then for season four, I was a staff writer. And when I was writer's assistant, I got agents. And my agents were like, I had like a dramedy script. Mm. And they were like, we want more of a comedy. And they were like, send us like five ideas. And so I sent them like five ideas and Diary was one of the ideas. They were like, we like this president one. And I was like, okay. And then because I'm my character in my show, I was like, well, I have to write this really quickly so they don't drop me.
Yeah.
So I wrote it like when I was an assistant, I would stay late in the room and I wrote Diary on spec. Like I wrote the pilot. And then because my bosses were so amazing and nurturing, when I got staffed for season four, they carved development out of my deal, which is rare for a staff writer. It's not always the case, but because it was bosses who knew me, because it was also CBS Studios, it was the same studio. It was, Aline was like, yeah, of course. So I was able to pitch the show while on my first staff job. And I went around and I pitched it. I was with Gina Rodriguez's company at that point. And I mean, it was the kind of thing like people were bosses supportive when you were pitching. And I was like, yeah, one time I went to go to a pitch and Aline goes, wait, you're leaving without a necklace? And called costumes and got me a necklace to complete the look.
That's so real though, because that's something that I hear like from a lot of people that like pitch. They're like, it's not just your pitch. Like you're also pitching yourself, which is very like Mindy Kaling, like tweeted about that. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So again, like here, you know, especially like even more, I think as a woman, because like, I feel like we have to do so much extra to pitch ourselves as well. Like it's like no shade to men. You all know it. It's different. And like, it's just like, it's so much more work.
I'm
like,
we get it.
No,
we
can handle it. And Aline, sorry,
because no, I was just gonna say, because like, you know, if you wear a shirt, like, and unfortunately in this world, you might wear like a top that you think is, you know, cute and like whatever. And somebody might think it's too sexy or maybe not sexy enough for the pilot that you're doing or what, you know what I mean? Obviously it's Disney. So that's a different vibe than what you would be doing to like Stars or cinema, whatever.
But I wore a blazer. I really went.
You went. Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing, I don't, Aline wrote the movie The Devil Wears Prada. So when, if she tells you you need a necklace, you get a necklace. Yes.
Wait, what?
Yes.
That is.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great
movie. Anybody's
movie.
Qualified that's to wild. Tell you to wow. accessorize.
What's missing in your outfit? So, so they were amazing. And I was pitching it around and Disney Plus, I feel, you know, so lucky it wasn't a network yet. It was like just still, you know, the thing that wasn't going to happen. And they were looking for a really specific thing. And my show fit that. And it's one of the only shows on Disney Plus that's not based on existing IP. I make the amazing joke that it's based on this IP.
Interesting person.
You don't have to laugh. So we pitched it and I left the Crazy Ex room a little early to staff Diary.
Wow.
So that was crazy. And I was like, what am I doing? And I sort of, to talk. Can I talk about imposter syndrome?
You can talk about it all.
Oh my gosh.
No, this is so important. Because so many people are looking up to you. And
so few people talk about it, especially in positions of power that still go through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I was scared to talk about it. I was scared. I was like, oh, they gave... The first season, I was a little bit like, okay, they gave like a baby the keys to the van and she doesn't know how to drive. But I was getting to the place and I was going there and I was like going over all the hills and potholes. I'm going to stick to this metaphor.
But when you got the parallel parking.
That's hard. That's a baby or an adult.
No, parallel parking is the finale.
that's the series finale. But I thought that there was something that like I needed, something I needed to do this job. And I realized, and the meta thing about it is like, if you had told 12-year-old me you're gonna have your own show, she would have been like, yeah, and it's on Disney and we're on Broadway. And you have like a column in the Miami Herald. I used to want a column in the Miami Herald.
Oh yes.
What?
And Miami New Times.
she'd be like, yeah, of course. But then if you had told like 20-year-old me, she would have been like, no. No, like I'm not good enough. There's people in my writing classes that are funnier and smarter. And so like making this show and the fact that it's about 12, 13-year-old me, it's been very meta, connecting with past me.
Cathartic. It's a cathartic process.
Exactly. Yeah. And getting that girl back and being like, yeah, I meant to do this because I'm doing it. And when I like had that mindset shift, it made me a better boss. It made me a better writer. It made me be like, oh, I can direct. And I didn't feel like I like raised my hand and I was like, I want to do this. And that was something that I don't think I would have even considered. I didn't consider it in season one. So channeling my younger self, I think, really helped me to kind of break through that.
I love that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's very true. And you're not afraid when you're younger. Like that's the thing that you have to hold on to.
Yeah.
We just have to remind ourselves who we were back when we really thought the sky was the limit and we had endless pot. You know, it is so true, Alana. Thank you so much for speaking on that because people forget.
I know.
People forget. People lose out of touch with their dreams when they were younger.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're right. Reality beats them out of people, but it's still there. The 12-year-old us is still in there.
I want to say also, listen, I think that everybody from Miami, no matter how shy or anything they are, there's just like this like Miami confidence that we all have inside of us.
Swagger.
To be fair, I realize mine sometimes is a little out of control for no reason, but
Raja has the opposite problem.
I do think that like sometimes like I'll be like, all right, fuck it, bitch, you're from Miami. And then I'm like, get into it. Like,
that's a mantra. That's a Miami mantra.
You're from Miami.
Yeah. I'm like, fuck it. None of these motherfuckers here are from Miami. They don't fucking know Miami. Why is that the thing? But whatever. Like, I do feel like, and I've talked to some other like Miami actor, comedian friends, and they're like, yeah, like sometimes I do feel that. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting because I thought it was just me being weird.
Well, the confidence it took us to drive down 95, I think, can prepare us.
I mean, truly.
For anything.
Yeah. I love that that's the metaphor coming back.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
Okay, so speaking of Miami and you know the craziness that we grew up in that we love, you have a Cuban, you know, it's based on a Cuban girl, a Cuban family. How much of your personal Cuban family and friends had inspired the characters? Because sometimes it's directly like, this is my tia. Yeah. This character is 100% my tia. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes this character is all four of my tias put together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much of that came from your personal family and friends?
Yeah. Well, it's my family and friends, but also as the season sort of evolved and myself.
Yeah.
It was also the writers and what they brought to the table. And we had really, you know, a bunch of Cuban writers, a bunch of Latinx writers. So Elena's me. I'm Elena. She's cooler. She's honestly cooler than I was. I was like a huge dweeb.
She's very cool.
She's so, and Tess, who plays Elena, is like leagues cooler than I am now. So the teens will save us all. Bobby's based on my brother. Bobby's the character. He has a whole coming out journey. My brother is not queer, but the relationship between the brother and sister and how he's so resistant to talk to her and how he sort of like learns to open up to her is really inspired by my relationship with my brother. We are like night and day. I am this. He is a computer science PhD student who's very inward. And so this season and season two, we really explore their dynamic. And it was really, I'm excited, you know, for my brother to see it because it really is kind of like a love letter to our relationship. Gabby, so my dad was born in Cuba. My mom is Jewish American. So Gabby is like, she's kind of a combination of my Jewish mother, because I think Jewish mothers and Cuban mothers have a lot in common. And I've like so much. And I know this also because the other thing she's a combo of is my tía, my Cuban tía. And so she's kind of like my Jewish mother, my Cuban tía, and my Cuban grandmother. And she's sort of like all, and honestly, me. Because I remember when I was writing Gabby, I was like, oh, am I going to be able to write about, like, write a Latina woman? Like, I can write a Latina girl. And then I was like, wait a second, I am what?
I have to get on Craigslist and try to figure out somebody
if I could talk to somebody.
I call myself girl all the time. And I'm like, girl, you are not girl anymore.
No, and I was like, okay, like, I got the 12-year-old down. And then I'm like, oh, but, like, I am, like, a woman in the world. Like, yeah, right back. So it's that, too. And then there is... I'm sure y'all saw In the Heights. The amazing Olga Meredith is our grandmother. Our ñeñe, very much based on my ñaña, which is also the Cuban grandmother, but she's more in, she's also the ñeñe. But she's also one of our writers, Jess Gonzalez, sort of like conceived of this. So she's kind of a combination of my ñaña and Jess's abuela. So it's cool. It's like, and as you have a writer's room and as you have multiple seasons, like, you know, it's someone's like, oh, my mom used to say that, and we put it in there. Or someone's like, this is something that we used to do. And it's this like amazing, lovely mix of so many people's experiences. And there is, you know, specificity. There's universality in that specificity. So
100%. And it welcomes the viewer in. Yeah. We recognize these and then we feel like we're a part of this family, you know? And that's why it's like, it feels authentic. If these, all these characters don't feel like cartoon, because you know what I mean? Like, I've grown up watching so many Latinx shows that feel cartoons and heightened versions of the Latinx experience. But this one feels so real in a way that it's like, I don't feel being talked down to. I don't feel condescending. They're not trying to, like, teach me Latinx culture. It just is. That's just the basis grounded reality, and I'm a part of this.
Tampoco they're not like throwing it in your face, you know, like sometimes like, it's like, okay,
oh my god,
this is a Latino family's only Latino food. They, god forbid, they have pizza, like, or I'm like, you know what I mean,
the telenovelas like on in the background and like they're talking about Castro at like every meal, and it's like, I mean, the Castro thing's kind of true, but I do think like that was really, I saw Gloria Calderon Kellett on a panel, and she was like, I don't wake up every morning and say like another day is a Latina, like she wakes up and she's like, what do I have to do today, and like, who do I have to see, and like, what, and I was 12 years old, especially 13, now it's like life is so rich and full, and just because I'm from somewhere doesn't mean that I shouldn't be able to explore that richness and fullness. So that's what, I'm glad you feel that way, because that's what we strive for.
I love that. I love that about shows. Like, that's one thing for sure. Even if it's not even just like, it's like when you, same thing, you watch a all Asian cast or like an all Black, whatever, like when they don't just throw it in your face, I'm like, oh, this is
well, it's stuff like this. Well, I do have to speak on this because it does feel like when there is a show that feels like condescending or like, it just feels like a lesson. Like we're teaching you about the Latinx experience. And then in my mind as a viewer, I'm like, well, then is this show really for me, someone who's Latinx, or is it for white people trying to learn what it means to be Latinx? And your show does not do that. Your show is good at being like, this is my reality, this is my experience, but this is for everyone.
If you have a show for everyone, it's so I feel that way about the Cuban stuff. I also feel that way, like, Elena uses big words, and I remember in like the pilot she used a word, and like it was like, oh, are people gonna know what that word means? And I'm like, then they'll look it up and learn a word, like, that's exactly. Isn't that why we engage in content at all, to like to hear the word croqueta, and then like if you don't know what that is, instead of like, a croqueta is like, just look it up and then go get one.
Exactly. We don't need a show. Honey, with do we have actual a croqueta in the kitchen?
Any croquettes? That's all they
Those
have.
Those are the dancers, right? Okay.
Wait, so Ilana, I want to ask you, what was your, did you always want to be a writer when you grew up? Like, how did you get into writing in the first place?
I mean, I wanted that column in the Miami Herald.
Which column? And you know this. Which column was it?
Yeah, like, did you want to be the writer of the column?
Yes. So, okay. Ana Veciana Suarez, I think it's Ana Veciana Suarez. If I'm wrong, you can fact check me. But there is a there was a Latina woman who had a column, and my mom was obsessed with her. And I was like, I literally, it was the closest thing I could think of to TV because I didn't know that what TV, like that people could make a living in TV. Mm-hmm. So I was like, a weekly writing job, like where I will write something every week and that will get, people will read it. Like that was just where my mind went. I was like, I'll be an author and I'll act in plays and I'll have a column.
Oh my God. I mean, that checks out.
Yeah. I was a theater kid as a surprise to nobody. Okay.
You heard it here first, everybody.
I feel like that's perfect for Crazy X, though, as well.
Yeah.
Like, you you have to love theater.
The Venn diagram of that was perfect for theater.
The jokes that I pitched and that made it into Crazy X are, like, the most niche. Like, there's a whole joke that's in there about how in a chorus, no one will get it, how in a chorus line, the character Zach is sometimes a voice and sometimes an actor. And I just like, it was something I like vomited out just because it made me laugh. And like, it made it into the show. Like, that's the kind of, like, I just was like, that's a thing on my mind. Anyway, so the theater came. I did a bunch of plays, but I was always like writing. I was always writing and I was always reading. And it was sort of like, because I didn't know, I didn't know that what a showrunner was. I didn't know what went behind making TV. I sort of, it didn't, not until college. I went to college for theater, went to Northwestern. And I, you know, I was like rolling around the floor for acting class and loving it, honestly.
Been there.
we've all been there. Mm-hmm. And I took playwriting. I took a couple of playwriting classes and I was like, oh, I love this. Like, this is special. This is cool. And I directed my first play and I just was kind of like feeling the water. And then I got into this 2-year program where every quarter we did a different kind of writing. So we did like feature film, short film, playwriting, and then fall senior year was TV. And it was kind of this like coalescence of everything that I loved because it was like, it had what I loved about obviously writing, but also the collaboration of theater and the character drivenness of like a good play and how you get to keep coming back, like the series of books that I would read and like the column that I wanted to write. And I just was like, I'm obsessed with this. Like, and it felt so, it was like, I had this kind of ethereal image of like me as an artist. And then when I learned what TV writing was, I had like I knew what my desk looked like. You know what I mean? Like it became, it also like my type A personality and like deadlines. And I was like, oh, you can get paid for it. And you can, you know, go to meetings and send emails and document, like so lame, but it like,
that's where you're thriving. Everything. You're thriving in that environment.
I mean, you're literally visually manifesting this at such a young age as well. Like you're continuously like just, you know, because it's not, it's just like you're like, say, you kept wanting it and wanting it. And like, I think that's a really cool thing because so many people, you know, it takes us a long time sometimes to figure out what the fuck we want to do, even when we're studying 100%. Something.
And I think like, that's also like totally amazing and great. Yeah. And one thing that I love about the show that I created.
Objectively speaking.
Have you heard of the show Diary? One thing that I appreciate about Diary is that it's not a show about a girl who wants to be president. It's not like she prints out a giant chart and it's like steps to being president and every episode she checks off a box. Like she doesn't know. She doesn't know because so many people don't know. And her life could go 1,000 different ways before she ends up at the White House. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like excited to be able to explore all of those twists and turns because it's okay to not know. And it's okay. And it's okay to change your mind. I moved to New York before LA because I didn't know anything. Mm. And I lived there 9 months. And I like, and a lot of people were like, you're not giving it a year. And I was like, I'm changing my mind. Like, I want to go to LA and like being okay and living in that. Yeah. So yes, like things happened. I was a precocious kid, but I also, I gave myself the freedom to change my mind, to like drop out of acting class and to be like, I am sorry, I will not roll on the floor anymore. Yeah. And to sort of go after it and let it like come to me too. So So yeah, that's the thing I love about Diary.
Yeah, normalize changing your mind. That's great.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, for our listeners, because, like, you know, again, like, a lot of there's not just like Latina people that, you know, look up to you and other writers that are Latina, but like, what is something that, I guess, advice wise that you would give anybody that is trying to, you know, follow your career? Like, you just said how, you know, you started as the assistant, then you got, you know, you little by little went up and up, and now you have these amazing mentors that are like, they have your back, and now you have your own show, season two. Like, what is some advice that you could give to someone that, you know, might just be starting or might be like close to like ready to get that assistant job?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would say, I think when I was an assistant, I was freaking out that I had to have like a million things written, because at any given moment, someone could be like, let me see it. And I say this in like the kindest possible way, like, you don't need to have that yet. Like you can have your one passion project, but like, focus on building relationships, meeting people, living life, doing things. Don't just sit in your room and write like 20 pilots, because no one's going to read 20 pilots. Someone will read one. And when, by the time they ask you, you want to get to a point where somebody can ask you for it. And if you're sitting in your room all day, no one's going to know to ask you for it. So like, live life, like, go to, I mean, and when COVID's over, go to parties, like, meet people, like, get out there, go to museums, like, get things to write about. So that's like my practical absorb, because when I got signed by my agents, I had my Crazy Ex episode, but all I had that was my own. I mean, I had some stuff, but I had that dramedy script. I had a 10-minute play, and I had a personal essay about my Cuban grandfather. Those were like the three, and they weren't even like all TV. It was like, my grandpa died and he was a complicated, arrogant Cuban man. And I decided to write about it. You know? And so I just think like, and on that note, I think I also felt like there was something that Hollywood, I was like, what does Hollywood want me to be? Like, I kind of had that, because I was like, who should I be? Like, what does Hollywood want me to be? What does a female TV writer look like? What does a Latina TV writer look like? What does Hollywood want me to be? And it was when I finally realized, and this is so corny, but it was when I realized that thing was myself, that I was like, oh, and it like became so, it was like an exhale. I was like, I can, and that's when I wrote Diary, honestly. And I wrote it not knowing what Disney Plus was, not knowing what would sell. I just like wrote my story. I wrote something that I would have wanted to see, that I did want to see, that made me laugh. And that's like, I was, and it doesn't have to be an autobiography, but if it has, like, I think that this industry really rewards authenticity and being able to say like, oh, only you could tell that story. So tell it.
Hell yeah. Right. Oh,
this is great
that.
Advice, not only for writers, but for actors, for anybody in the arts. Is the whole thing about like, instead of going out, we're going inward, I think is definitely, because you can say be authentic and people could still be like, how? Where do I look for that? Instead of, you know what I mean? They still won't get it. But that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I have one question, because I think we have to go, right?
Yeah, we got to
What are the odds of a Disney Plus shared universe?
What?
Is that too much?
I'm
a shared
for this
universe. Disney Plus Diary of what?
Of a future Mandalorian? What are you trying to do, a crossover?
Because he's writing the show and it's Disney, and there could be a shared universe of different, like a Peñaland is what I'm asking.
Oh my God, Peñaland.
Okay, but now, earlier you were bailing on me.
I don't know what Disney universe means. We just
a shared.
That was an
universe.
Incredibly roundabout way of asking: is there going to be a Peñaland,
or like a ride, experience?
I was going through the Disney. I was like, oh, I'll just use the Peñaland. That'll be. Fun.
I like the idea of a ride. Like, what is it? Like an oval office where you like travel on little diaries. I like that. I literally thought you meant like, is the Cañedo Reed family gonna like adopt Baby Yoda? And I was.
I didn't mean like all of it. Your own carved out universe. Oh, so
I mean,
things
that sounds good.
Spawn from this.
Here's the thing, and I mean this with all like to all of your amazing listeners. I'm so proud of this show and this season, and I really would love eyeballs on it and people to watch it and tell their friends so that we get a season 3.
Yes.
and a Penulant, but so that we get a season three.
One step at a time. One step at a time. I get it.
One step at a time. We got to have the third season before your own world. I really would love to keep telling this story. And our cast and crew are so incredible. And on podcast verse on Earwolf Land, I just want to, you know, it's a show that kids can enjoy, but it's not a kid's show. And I think the season is one of the, I laughed so hard making this season. So I think people will laugh really hard. I think it's funny. And sorry if this is tacky. I just want people to watch.
No.
Why is that tacky? Yes. That's what you're talking to us.
No.
We're trying to get people with eyeballs on the show. What do you mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. You like to think that it's
we know what we're doing here, Elena. We know what we're doing here.
Okay. Well, with that said, everybody, make sure you watch Diary of a Future President on
tomorrow.
Disney. Yes.
Hey Siri, remind me to watch. Tell Siri to remind
you. Siri, Alexa, everybody, remind me. Google, everybody.
Yeah, that's very elitist. I'm sorry.
I just said Alexa. My little thing just went off. The light. Before we go, I would love for you to plug all things for you, for anything else coming up, anything else, your handles, and also quick. Shout out to your eyebrows because they be on fleek. And I wanted to mention that earlier and then I forgot. And then we just got into another conversation.
Listeners are missing out.
But I'm like, everybody check out her IG and give her some eyebrow love because I'm obsessed with like eyebrows and they're really good. So I have to give you a compliment.
Okay, that's another example of holding on to your middle school self because I hated these when I was 12.
Look at that. Yeah.
I hated my big bushy eyebrows. I loved them. I tweezed them. And now it's like, these are quarantine. I haven't touched these in 2 years.
Yeah,
so
same.
The lesson. Yeah. But if you want to see the eyebrows in the flesh, I am on... all my handles are like kind of jokey because I guess I never really imagined I'd have to be plugging them professionally. You can follow me on Instagram at Lanstagram, L-A-N-stagram. Made that as a joke in 2012. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Alana Cubana. That was also made kind of like tongue in cheek and I'm really glad I sagged it.
That one's cute. I like that.
That works.
I love that. I love that handle. I'm never going to get rid of that one. And then watch the show. I've got other projects cooking, but nothing is real yet. But keep a lookout and tell your friends. What? Maybe at
CBS? You have
a few things in the works.
Tony, she doesn't want to talk about it, Tony.
Well, it's pitch season. So it's like nothing is real, but there's you know, when it's like everything's happening, but nothing is happening. That's sort of what things are right now. So it's like, you know. We'll see. But yes, with CBS and some movie stuff. And I'm just so excited to be able to come on here and laugh with you guys. I'm such big fans of all of you individually and collectively.
Thank you.
So much.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast. Everybody makes
this was so incredible. Thank you again so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Yes. And everybody make sure you follow her and watch Mañana.
Mañana, tomorrow.
Mañana, mañanita. And everyone, you guys can also follow us at Spanish Aquí Presents on IG, at Spanish Aquí on Twitter. You could follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Raisa Licea.
And you can follow me at Of Course It's Carlos on Instagram.
You can follow me at Ozzymo, O-Z-Z-Y-M-O, on Instagram and Twitter.
You can follow me at Diary of a Present Croquette.
That's pretty good, Tony. You know what? Tony, I'm going to give it to you.
Tony, that's incredible.
You really did it. You really did it this time.
I'm actually going to go change my handles right now. They are currently at the Tony Roderick, but look out for the one I just said. Elena, thank you so much. You're such a delight. Thank you. So excited for you.
Yes.
Just sending you a big hug.
Big hugs to all of you. Thank you for everything.
Dale.
Spanish Aquí Presents is an Earwolf production executive produced by me, Raisa, Tony, Carlos, and Oscar. It's engineered by Jordan Duffy and produced by Anita Flores.
You can follow us on social media on Instagram at Spanish Aquí Presents and Spanish Aquí on Twitter.
Find our latest merch at potswag.com and especially look out for the Spanish Aquí Presents enamel pin set featuring all of our beautiful faces.
Yeah, and help us get the word out by telling a friend about the show today.
Make sure to rate and review Spanish Aquí Presents and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
Want more Spanish Aquí Presents? Find our full archive and ad-free episodes on Stitcher Premium. Use promo code SAP for a 1 month free trial at stitcher.com/premium.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.